I'd like to first start out by asking for your reaction to the EPA's draft rules that were released this week.
Sure. So the EPA rules that were announced yesterday were really quite significant because it's the first time that we've ever required power plants to reduce their carbon emissions. And unlike other kinds of air pollution that comes out of those smokestacks, we've let carbon go completely uncontrolled, and it's having an impact on our climate. So we thought these were pretty reasonable and relatively modest first steps, but it's really terrific just to begin to set an example that it's time that we regulate that form of pollution that really is having quite an impact on our way of life.
So in your work and your years of experience working in this type of policy, you said you think these are reasonable, but do you think they could go further? Do you think it's necessary in the future that these rules go further?
The rules that were introduced, and you know, it's been probably 15 years that I've been working for rules like this, and what we've seen over the course of those 15 years is that we went from projecting changes in the climate, and we knew that at some point we were going to start seeing hotter and wetter, that areas like West Virginia would become hotter during the summer and wetter both year-round, big flood-type inspiring downpours. And we've seen that went from a projection to a reality. We're seeing more and more of that happen. These rules are the beginning of regulating the pollution that's causing that, but they absolutely can be stronger, and over time they will be. But we think the administration really took a pretty modest step to help states like West Virginia transition more easily.
So before we move on to talking about these rules and regulations and the changes that we'll see in West Virginia, I think I'd first like you to address the people in our audience who are still skeptical and think that climate change doesn't exist.
Oh, sure. You know, I think that this is an issue that has become more about politics than it is about science, really. When, as we talk to our neighbors, the science is pretty clear in terms of the measurements and the kinds of things scientists rely on. Are we seeing a correlation between pollution like carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and changes in our climate that are making it having more heat waves, longer heat waves, temperatures hotter at night, and similarly with extreme weather events and, like I said, longer downpours, more frequent downpours. That kind of evidence is pretty well established. In fact, of all the survey of climate scientists, 97% of them say that fact is unequivocal. What is up for conversation and debate is what do we do about it? And we can take modest steps or do nothing and take our chances. And we think that that's most people are not going to want to take that kind of risk with their children's lives. So and the good news is a lot of the kinds of things that like these rules and the kinds of steps one takes to address the problem are pretty good for us anyway. You know, getting more energy efficient, less reliant on foreign oil, all of those things that can solve the problem are actually pretty good for the country too. So I understand that people are confused because of the how polarized the topic has become, but the scientific facts are pretty clear.
Okay, so if we can kind of switch and get into the rules themselves, I think we here at West Virginia Public Radio have tried our best to explain what the rules mean. But in your own words, can you give me an overview of what these regulations are going to mean for the entire country?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing for the whole country is that we've set a goal of how much we're going to reduce emissions from power plants, and we've launched a process whereby every state in the union is going to begin figuring out how they meet their unique goal. And in doing that, I think it's going to unleash a tremendous amount of innovation. States are going to be looking for how much more can we invest in wind? How much more can we invest in solar? Are there ways that we can run our existing power plants more efficiently? And we've proven with other environmental regulations over the years that once we set the goal, once we tell industry, once we tell states what it is we need to do to protect public health and the environment, not only we do it, we exceed those goals. So that planning process is going to get underway, and I think it's going to be quite exciting what states decide to do and the kind of benefits they're going to see along the way that go way beyond the benefits of reducing emissions and cleaner air.
I think it's safe to say that over the next year, as these rules go through a comment period, if they don't change, if they stay as they are now, we're going to see a lot of changes here in West Virginia. We're one of the most dependent states on energy produced by coal. So what are the possibilities going forward for West Virginia? What can our diversified plan look like?
You're absolutely right. West Virginia is one of the most the state's most dependent on coal, but it's also a state that is already changing. In fact, renewable energy generation from wind, solar, and geothermal sources increased by more than 250% in West Virginia. So I think there's lots of assets for West Virginia to rely on. The other thing that's important for folks to know is that the EPA's flexible approach meant that the goal that was set for West Virginia is actually among the most modest in terms of the changes that it has to meet. It's somewhere between Rhode Island's 15% and Washington State's 82% reduction. So it's about 21% emission reductions that West Virginia's got to meet by 2030. And there's lots of ways to do that. Again, the continued investment in wind, which I know there's been a lot of development of wind. There's a huge room for efficiency, improving the efficiency of the plants, the coal-fired power plants themselves. There's the possibility of, again, some mothballing of the oldest plants that are actually pretty inefficient and uneconomic to run with co-firing those with natural gas. And then there's the fact of the matter is that even though West Virginia has increased its investments in renewables, your neighbors on either side of you, Pennsylvania and Ohio, have actually invested more in renewables. So there's some real interesting possibilities for a regional approach where states could work together to average out their emissions and meet those reductions together.
So state leaders have kind of already thrown out that the example that you gave, that switching to natural gas might be one way that we can try to meet these reduction standards. But I don't think we really have any idea of how costly that can be. Is it an expensive switch to change your coal-fired plant to one that runs on natural gas?
So I think it depends on the plant. In some places, it can. I think they pay for themselves in terms of, again, not immediately, but over time. The plants, natural gas plants, are cheaper to build and cheaper to run. So in the long run, I don't think that it would be as expensive as running the old coal fleet that you're running right now, given the upgrades and improvements that are necessary to keep that fleet running. So, in fact, over time, it actually might be cheaper. But I think that's probably not what people are most concerned about, right? I mean, they're concerned about what's going to happen to their electricity bills, what's going to happen to the people who work at those plants, and those are very real and very valid concerns. And I think the state will be looking carefully at a transitional phase of, I think there are actually ways that one could co-fire with coal and natural gas. That's going to be one option for the state to look at. But it's really important that they take a look at what's going to be the most cost-effective approach for the consumers of West Virginia, because it could be that in many cases, natural gas, or it could be that wind is more is less expensive than natural gas. So those are all the options that the state's really going to have to take a fresh look at.
So over the past couple of days, the biggest concerns, as you said, are with the average person. Am I going to see my electric bill increase? Is this going to cause me to lose my job at this power plant or in the mining or related industries? Do the benefits environmentally, do they outweigh those costs?
Well, there are tremendous environmental benefits and health benefits from this move, especially when you look nationally. And our air quality doesn't stay over our state, doesn't respect state lines. The benefits to to particularly children that are suffering from asthma, the benefits from older folks who have other respiratory problems, of cleaning up the air that is caused by primarily coal-fired power plants is really just going to be is almost inestimable. However, it's not to take away from those very real issues that consumers and workers face. So I think it does outweigh from a societal perspective, but I absolutely think West Virginia and the United States can and should pay particular attention to what it's going to take creating a plan for your state that really takes care of consumers and workers in the process. And I think that's going to be completely doable, but it's something that is really an imperative that folks of West Virginia ought to demand from their states.
I think one of the biggest critiques of this plan that stood out to me is that that if we do this alone, if the United States takes this on and does this alone, globally, it's not really going to make that much of a difference. Can you address that concern?
You bet. It's a great question. And the timing of this rule is just perfect, because what people often don't know in the U.S. is that, you know, we've watched China grow. We've heard a lot about how many coal-fired plants China is producing. They've surpassed the U.S. in terms of their pollution and emissions of carbon dioxide. But they've also surpassed us in their investment in renewables. And in the next year, 2 years, there's going to be global negotiations going on about what's the global goal. How are we going to work together to reduce emissions? And by moving in this direction, by adopting these rules and implementing them in the states, we're signaling to China that we're going to do our part if they do theirs. And what will happen in the next 2 years is coming up with an international agreement that really has the U.S. and China and the rest of the world committing to similar kinds of changes and goals that it's going to take, so that all of our efforts really matter to the climate and to our health and for our children's future.
So making a change like this, taking this initiative, gives us leverage as we go into those negotiations?
You bet it does.
Okay. Angela Anderson, Director of the Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.